Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome back to News and Views. I'm Rob Schofield. Experts agree that the construction and maintenance needs for North Carolina's public school building network is massive and growing, and now tops $8 billion. Earlier this month, in response to this growing problem, the North Carolina Budget and Tax Center released a new report entitled Make Space for Learning: Current Options to Meet North Carolina's School Facility Needs Fall Short of Sustainable Solutions. Last week, I caught up with one of the authors of the report and one of the state's leading experts on K-12 education policy, Chris Nordstrom. Well, Chris Nordstrom, welcome back to News and Views. Good to have you back with us.
Thank you for having me.
So let's talk about what's going on in the public education world right now. State lawmakers and the governor are putting forth, or at least they're getting together, their public education proposals for 2019. But before we get to them, can you take a step back and kind of give listeners the current lay of the land in the public education world?
Well, we've sort of lost a decade with the last 10 years of education policy and funding decisions in the state. Our per-student funding in our schools is down about 5.4% on a per-student basis. Our schools have fewer teachers, fewer assistant principals, fewer teacher assistants, fewer instructional support personnel. So that's your nurses, your librarians, your counselors, your school psychologists. Less money for books, less money for supplies. Across the board, our schools are facing some incredible budget pressures that have yet to be addressed by the General Assembly.
So we hear talk that, well, you know, teachers got some raises. I mean, teachers got out in the street last year and 20 or 30,000 of them came to Raleigh. And the General Assembly, a lot of conservatives who for a long time said, oh, North Carolina teachers aren't underpaid. Now they're saying, well, yeah, I guess they were, and we've given them some raises, and that ought to take care of everything. But what you're telling me is there's a lot more to the picture.
Yeah. So the General Assembly, to the extent that they've added additional money in our public schools, they've focused all of that money on teacher, educator pay raises, which was a big need. It still is a big need. So a few points there. First is that they're really trying to make up for a lack of action in the first couple of years of the decade when teacher salaries were frozen, even though state revenues had risen.
Bounded from the recession.
Right. So they're sort of digging themselves out from their own hole. So, you know, over the last 5 years or so, there have been pretty decent raises given to teachers. But if you look over the past decade or so, you know, the record's pretty mediocre overall. And we still have a long way to go. The important metric when you look at teacher salaries is not how we compare to other states. It's really how we compare to other industries. The real competition for talent happens not from a teacher looking, oh, am I going to teach in Idaho or North Carolina this year? It's the kid who's at UNC Chapel Hill saying, am I going to be a lawyer? Am I going to be an engineer? Or am I going to be a teacher? And with teacher salaries so far below those other industries, in North Carolina, our teacher wage competitiveness, so how teacher salaries compare to other industries within the state, is second worst in the nation.
So, or it might be a third-year teacher saying, maybe I'll go to work for a tech company
exactly. And
leave teaching because I'm not paying off my student debt or whatever.
Exactly.
The governor has put forward his budget proposal in recent weeks. There's some good stuff in there. There's some promising stuff. But your overall take, I gather, is that, boy, it's still not repairing the damage that we've got to repair in this.
Yeah, I mean, even if we had 10 years of Governor Cooper's proposals, we still wouldn't be getting where we need to be. Really, the real culprit here is that we've had massive tax cuts in the state. So the tax cuts we've had since 2013 are draining $3.6 billion a year from state coffers. You know, that's money that could be used to meet a lot of state needs, including education. Even though Roy Cooper's budget sort of prioritizes education within the amount of funds that he spends, it does very little to actually meet the needs of our public schools. So I think his proposal would still leave funding for supplies about 40% below pre-recession levels, textbooks still 30% below pre-recession levels, professional development for teachers 65% below pre-recession levels. So he has good priorities. It's just that there's not enough money to actually meet the needs to fulfill those priorities.
And you've pointed out that even pre-recession, it wasn't like things were the
very
garden salad days there.
Yeah, on. You know, North Carolina wasn't exactly leading the nation in per-student funding when it came to the amount of spending in North Carolina public schools in relation to the size of our economy. Prior to the recession, we ranked 42nd in the nation. So we weren't doing a great deal to fund our public schools even before the recession hit. Since that time, that effort measure has fallen. According to the most recent data, we're 48th in the nation. Only the two Dakotas rank below us when it comes to funding effort.
It should be pointed out also that the tax cuts that have been implemented over the last several years, which have primarily benefited people at the top, even before we had those tax cuts, North Carolina was, at least in terms of new businesses coming into the state, already sort of ranked near the top. It wasn't like we needed to slash taxes in order to attract business to come to the state. It was already coming to North Carolina. And indeed, one could make the argument that it's the education system that will keep them coming.
Absolutely. And, you know, we've fallen in our rankings. When you look at how North Carolina compares to other states across the country, our ranking has fallen over the last 9 years compared to other states. And not only that, it's fallen particularly for Black students, Hispanic students, and students from low-income families.
One area in which we seem to have a little more agreement, even between Republicans and Democrats, is that there is need for school construction and repair dollars. But the estimates of what we need are pretty astronomical. You've recently co-authored a report in which you looked at least at the Senate and the House proposals. The governor has since come out with his own proposal in this area, a school bond proposal. Talk to us a little bit about what you're finding in that area.
Yeah, so about every 5 years, the Department of Public Instruction does a survey of school districts to determine the construction needs across the state. Last one was done about 4 years ago and said we have $8.1 billion worth of school capital needs. It's certainly gone up inflation. We've had a couple hurricanes, and we've had this new class size requirements in grades K through 3 that are going to require schools to build a lot of additional classrooms to meet those requirements. So the overall number is certainly higher than $8.1 billion. To meet that need, there have been three proposals now. First is the House proposal, which would be a $1.9 billion bond. $1.5 billion of that would go to the public schools. Then the Senate proposals, Senate Bill 5, where they take money off the top of the tax collections each year and direct a certain proportion of that to school capital needs and other state capital
needs. So rather than issuing a bond and literally borrowing the money from banks, we're just going to basically just take it out of the budget each
year. Right. It's a pay-as-you-go plan.
That's what they call it.
And then the governor had a larger bond issue.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Your finding is that while, you know, it wouldn't hurt to do this, any of these, it certainly doesn't meet the need.
Yeah, so a couple of things. One is that neither the House proposal nor the Senate proposal nor the governor's proposal, although we didn't look at the governor's proposal in the report, neither of those proposals come close to meeting schools' needs. And those needs are a function of those tax cuts that have been enacted over the last decade. So because of those tax cuts, the General Assembly has done certain things to divert funding away from school capital. For example, in the lottery, when the lottery bill was first introduced, it promised to give 50% of its revenue to public school capital. They have never met that requirement. It started off at 40%. It's fallen since then. But over the 12 years of the lottery, if they had met their initial promise of 50%, it would be another $1.5 billion of funding that our schools would have had. Schools also used to get a carve-out of
corporate taxes?
Correct, yeah, the corporate income tax. That went away during the recession, permanently eliminated during 2013 when the General Assembly decided to slash corporate income taxes. That's another about $1 billion that would have gone to our public schools if it weren't for these tax cuts.
So the bonds, we still expect something's going to happen. I mean, I guess as flawed as these are, it would be better that we do something. And probably the bond proposal is superior to the idea of the so-called pay-as-you-go, right?
Yeah, so our report does what's called a net present value analysis. So under each proposal, schools would get money in future years, but the amounts would differ across the two proposals. So what a net present value analysis does, it looks at that cash flow over the next 25 years and says, okay, based on that cash flow, what's the equivalent lump sum payment today? And based on that analysis, the House's bond plan is superior to the Senate's pay-as-you-go plan. Neither of them, again, comes close to actually meeting the needs. What would probably be the best move overall is to issue a bond and then get rid of this idea that we'll carve off money from the general fund. Just getting rid of that plan entirely would free up money for public schools that's otherwise being diverted to other state capital needs.
And there are those needs as well, obviously. It deserves to be pointed out. Education remains by far the largest share of the state budget, but the state has all kinds of needs. So you have any predictions? What's going to happen this year? Any thoughts?
I never feel too safe predicting what these guys are going to do. I think there will be something done. I guess if I were forced to make a prediction, I would say maybe a smaller version of each house's plan would come through, which would actually be the sort of most suboptimal option of them all, of course.
Unfortunately, that seems to be the pattern in recent years. There's still a lot of work cut out for us if we're going to rebuild North Carolina's public schools. We're so glad, though, that you're keeping track of it. Folks should check you out at ncjustice.org. And also, you write for NC Policy Watch all the time. Check him out at ncpolicywatch.com. Chris Nordstrom, please keep up the good work. It's critically important, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
Thank you very much.
Well, that's it for this edition of News and Views. Be sure to check us out online and subscribe to our free newsletters at ncpolicywatch.com. For producer Clayton Henkel, this is Rob Schofield. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again next week.
You've been listening to News and Views. A weekly look at state and policy issues is a production of North Carolina Policy Watch. Visit them online at ncpolicywatch.com.